WJJT Elmhurst.
This is WJJG Elmhurst, Chicago. The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily express the views of WJJG ownership, its staff, or sponsors.
Seasons turn like a heart. Your father's days are lost to you. This is your time here to do what you will do. Your life is now. Your life.
Welcome to Aging Info Radio for caregivers, seniors, and those concerned about their aging journey. I am Sue Zawacki, your host, and I'm on every Thursday at 1 o'clock p.m. on WJJG AM 1530, Chicago's hometown station. We are also streaming live on the web at WJJGAM1530.com. If at any time during any of my shows you have a question for my expert guests, please give us a call at 708-493-1530. We welcome your calls and your questions. And once again, that studio, our studio number is 708-493-1530. My show today is called TLC for the Greatest Generation. Before I introduce my first expert guest, I want to speak about the Greatest Generation. This is a generation that has always inspired me. The Greatest Generation knew how to strive for a better life. These are the seniors who faced a Great Depression and World War II that called for many sacrifices. Those sacrifices were the driving force that gave them the will to improve the lives of those they loved at any cost to themselves. They taught us how to share, be kind, generous, and respect our elders. They passed on traditions and values that helped their children and grandchildren to become responsible, caring, and productive adults. One of the most overlooked gifts that this generation provided to society was the capital they accumulated by their will to save. Because they were astute savers, the capital they accumulated provided the money for companies to form and grow. Their accumulation of cash gave future generations of average people a lifestyle that only the very wealthy enjoyed years ago. They used party lines, anxious to talk to one another. The TV was invented along with ballpoint pens, jet engines, and Polaroid. They ate Campbell's tomato soup, and the soap was Palmolive. Gas was 10 cents a gallon. A home cost an average of $7,000. A steak was 20 cents a pound, and the average income was $1,970 a year. The famous icons were Babe Ruth, Clark Gable, Ginger Rogers, Joan Crawford, and more. Life was more simplified, yes, but easy, no. This generation has earned every bit of tender, loving care that they respectfully deserve. Thank you, excuse me, please, you're welcome. Let me get that door, help you lift your bag, or sir or ma'am, can I help you? These are all acts of kindness that they have rightfully earned. So when a senior crosses your path, take a moment and be kind. Yes, they deserve every ounce of kindness today and every day for the rest of their lives because they are honorably the greatest generation. Speaking of TLC, I would like to introduce my first expert guest today. I have Charlotte Bishop here, who is the founder and president of Creative Case Management, an Evanston-based company. She and her staff are geriatric care managers and certified case managers, meeting the needs of countless older adults and individuals with disabilities and the families who benefit from a personal care manager. Welcome, Charlotte, to Aging Info Radio, and thank you for being my guest today.
Hello, and thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, I met Charlotte in the spring of this year, and I was telling her that I truly believe that many others are not aware of how a case management company can help families starting to need care for an aging loved one. I said that people really do not fully understand what they are about, so today we are going to find that out. Now, Charlotte, on your card, it says GCM with a few other letters, but tell our listeners what a geriatric care manager is.
A geriatric care manager is someone who has skills and expertise and experience in working with seniors, specifically the geriatric population, and coordinating services and care for them. The GCM is also provided by the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers. We have to meet special criteria in order to be considered a professional geriatric care manager. It's not an acronym that we can attach to the end of our name by whim. It really is something that is earned and deserved after experience and training.
Now, do you have to be certified to be a GMC?
A GCM?
A GCM.
Yes. You do get the certification after submitting a list of qualifications and credentials to the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers. Once they assess your skills and experience, then you get to call yourself a GCM and use it on your cards, and you can use their logo as part of your marketing materials.
I see. So how is that different from a certified case manager?
Different skill set in that the specific training for a geriatric care manager is specific to geriatrics. As a certified case manager, which I also hold, my broad base of experience as a certified case manager or anyone with that designation indicates that they have experience in being able to navigate the medical and the rehab fields on behalf of their clients.
I see. What should a family look for in a geriatric care manager?
Ideally, a geriatric care manager is someone that you feel comfortable with. You need to be able to reveal to them worries, concerns, issues that may exist on behalf of your loved one, and then trust them enough to be able to help determine what the most appropriate course of action is. So the key points are accountability, accessibility, experience, approachability, and willingness to problem solve.
I see. Now, is there a central directory of geriatric care managers or other where others can find the resources for them?
Yes. If you were to go on the internet and look up the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers, or NAPGCM.org, There is a directory, and the directory is listed according to geographic region. So if you were to live in Chicago, but your mom were to live in San Francisco, you could easily go to the NAPGCM.org website and look up information for San Francisco.
Okay. Well, how would you sum up what a geriatric care manager does that people cannot already do for themselves?
A geriatric care manager, certified case manager, someone with those credentials, has, as I said earlier, the skills and experience to pull together a variety of information. We're not only looking at medical aspects of an individual's status, but also what are the social, what are the emotional aspects. We are familiar with the financial implications of some of the medical conditions that they have to deal with. We're also working very closely with families to determine what the most appropriate direction is for their loved one. So what we can do is pull together in a very short time frame a list of resources and options where an individual left to their own would have to take time to search the internet, determine a plan of action, and hope that they were going in the right direction on behalf of their loved one.
So you're like a care navigator.
Exactly. Which, in fact, is why it's a care or case manager. We don't provide hands-on care or therapy, but we are definitely expected to be the experts to help you make good choices and good decisions.
Now, does Medicare pay for your service, or is this private pay?
It's private pay. And often that cost is shared by family members or a person's estate, trust. However, the financial coverage has been set up by the family and or the legal area.
I see. When you're working with a family, when do you or do you decide this, that you feel home is no longer the best place for an aging loved one? Do you decide that, or do you work with the family members to bring that to light?
Actually, that's one of the trickiest issues that faces so many families. I don't make any decisions. I am an option maker. My job is to do a home assessment, identify what resources are available, identify what the needs are, and then present them as options to the family members or the loved one. And then everyone is involved to make a good decision or the best decision out of difficult decisions.
Now, with families, there's a lot of dynamics. Sometimes a lot of the families have 5 to 8 children or maybe more or less. With those dynamics and getting agreement, I mean, what are some of the situations that you run into that you're able to be a mediator and bring it to light for family members to really get what the best care is, not so much the role that they're playing or attempting to?
In my particular job, I am a licensed counselor here in the state of Illinois. So as such, I'm a counselor. And although I don't do therapy per se, my job is to help people navigate those difficult relationships. Coming in as a separate third party, I'm able to present in an objective fashion all the information and the data that they need. Sometimes it does get very sticky and very tricky with family members playing out old familial roles. But the reality is, the bottom line, we're looking for the best interest of the senior and what is really going to make them safe, independent, happy, healthy, and able to live as well as they can for whatever time they have remaining.
So what is your advice to siblings that are all trying to be the decision maker or caregiver?
My best advice is to find someone like myself to be able to step in and work with them, to be able to recognize that there are going to be issues, but what is the goal? The goal is to take care of their loved one to the best of their ability.
Well, hold that thought. I'm with Charlotte Bishop from Creative Case Management, and that's creativecasemanagement.com. We'll be right back. Wait a minute. You're 65, and you're 65, and you are too? You guys are the early boomers. And I heard the senior population is going to increase by 40% within the next 5 years. I believe we are on the forefront of a silver tsunami. Thursdays at 1 o'clock, join Aging Info Radio for caregivers, seniors, and those concerned about their aging journey. Our guests will bring their expertise to topics of interest. If you would like to be an expert guest or sponsor Aging Info Radio, call us at 877-704-1530 or email info@aginginforadio.com. I am Sue Zawacki, your host on Aging Info Radio, WJJG, AM 1530.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Aging Info Radio. I'm here with Charlotte Bishop from Creative Case Management, and we're going to get back to our conversation. And before we do, if you are trying to lose weight, lower your blood pressure, cholesterol, or you are diabetic, I have a solution. Give your body what it needs, and it will take care of itself. Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating Program will put you on the right track. Think smart, think healthy, think Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating. Pick up the phone and call 800-442-DIET or 800-442-3438 or go to their website at seattlesutton.com for healthy and nutritional meals. Well, when we went to break, we were talking about, I was talking with Charlotte about family dynamics. So one of the things I want to know, Charlotte, is with these dynamics, how does a family go about making the decision that care is needed?
Often, a decision comes about out of a crisis. There usually is a medical emergency or a situational emergency where the individual is living at home and suddenly an event happens which brings everything to the forefront, where they realize that change has to be made and no one is really clear about what to do. When you're dealing with family dynamics and the jockeying for position, as I said earlier, often old family dynamics do crop up. And it's essential that one person take the role of the leader and work with me as an objective third party to be able to identify what the options are and then take it to the remainder of the group. If there are significant differences of opinion, I have to help them sort those out, identify what is old issues and old ways of interacting that really need to be addressed to effectively look at what can we do for their loved one and to give them the best quality of life, given medical, financial, and environmental considerations that have to be thought about and managed.
Now, do you also look at the siblings that live close by versus those that live out of state, and are you a communicator with all of them?
Absolutely. One of the things that I love about being able to use email communication is that I put it together as a group and then can communicate updates consistently to the family members. They can then communicate back with me, and it enables everybody to be on the same page. It makes it much easier not only to communicate but to also get major decisions made when timeliness is essential.
And that's a big issue. Because
Absolutely.
What happens with family dynamics is nobody wants to make the decision, or the one that makes the decision is made wrong, and it kind of pulls it all apart. And they forget
Exactly.
the main objective, which is getting the care that an aging loved one needs.
And there are times where I have to step in and really confront the issue as tactfully as I can, that family issues aside, we have to make a decision. And that sometimes requires bringing in the physicians, that the physician's input is included in the decision-making process. And, in fact, if we have to have a family conference, we will do that.
Great. Well, what community resources are available to help an older adult in their home?
There are a variety of resources depending on where the community is. Chicago has a variety of resources that are much larger than what you would find in a more rural community. But essentially, you do have offices for the aging. You do have home health services. You do have Meals on Wheels. You do have services such as Seattle Sutton. These are the kinds of programs that I tap into to make my clients who are living at home safe and, frankly, ensure that they are getting reasonable meals.
So I would think that your company has a lot of resources to pull from when a family needs home care or meals, or is that how you
Exactly.
do it?
Well, in fact, one of the things that I do tell my clients is that I may not have all the answers, but I sure know where to go to get them.
Oh, that's great.
And that's really important because it's developing the resources and the contacts, but it's also essential to have appropriate follow-through, because if you don't follow through on services that you've coordinated, it's very easy for things to slip through the cracks, and especially if the family who is coordinating the care, and if they've asked me to be local, if they're not able to be on site, it enables me to be not only on site, but to also give them the information about how their loved one is doing.
I see. Well, what can be done to make a home more secure for an older adult that may be living alone?
The very first step is to do a home assessment. And whether it's a geriatric care manager who would do that or whether it would be you yourself going through your loved one's home, you need to take a look at their security, their safety, what might present a fall hazard, which would be like scatter rugs, up to and including are they remembering to turn off the stove after making a meal? Are they remembering to shut off the water in the sink? Little things like that. I've had a situation where there was an individual who went out in her pajamas to shovel snow, and the family was not aware of that kind of behavior until a neighbor called. So it's those kinds of activities that the individual may be doing within the security of their home, but unless it's brought to your attention or our attention, no one's going to know. So a home assessment is necessary to just go in with a very critical eye and see what could present a problem or a hazard for the individual.
Now, when you go in there, are you able to also bring to light things that can maximize their independence?
Oh, certainly. For instance, once you take away the fall hazards or make it more easy to open up cupboard doors with larger handles, that sort of thing, you can also look at modifications that can be made in a bathroom, raised toilet seat, grab bars in the shower, larger doorknobs on the doors so they can open the doors more easily, ramps instead of stairs where appropriate, in some cases even putting a stair lift into the home, which would enable them to navigate between floors in a safe fashion. Sometimes it's simply a matter of putting in frozen meals in the freezer so that they can do a frozen meal in a microwave versus having to turn on a stove.
Which leads me to the next question, is making a home safe for people with dementia.
Yes.
What do you do there?
Frankly, that's tricky. We have several options. If the individual is living alone, there is always the option of getting home someone to live at home with them. And that person would be able to provide assistance with light housekeeping, bathing assistance, maybe light meals. Otherwise, what I have done is when they've lived in a family setting, I have actually coordinated putting in a security system so that if they had a risk of wandering, there would be a little beep when the door would be open, so family would know that the individual was trying to leave the premises. There are some, though, who really can't be left alone or who really are not safe living in an environment that is separate from others, and so we have to then look at an assisted living facility, and often those would have a memory unit. And those memory units are specifically designed for individuals who have memory issues.
Which leads me into, what about all the housing definitions for most people are not clearly understood?
Yes.
So you just talked about assisted living. Now, there is assisted living with, like you said, there's facilities just for Alzheimer's and dementia. You want to talk a little bit more about even independent living communities that will, where people stay from the beginning and till the end?
Yes. First and foremost is the independent environment where the individual is living in their home and we do whatever we can to keep them there and safe. If that is not practical or feasible, then you look at independent living in a community setting where they have some oversight. Then if they need to transition into an assisted living component where there is more day-to-day assistance, which would be meal preparation, assistance with dressing, assistance with medication, potentially even some home health assistance, that would be that level. And that can, you can add on services very often at assisted living facilities. If an individual needs to step up their care and they need more hands-on assistance, then you might be looking at a skilled nursing facility. And at that point, they still could have an independent component to it, but it would be with much more oversight. You will hear the acronym of a CCRC, which is a Continuum of Care Retirement Center. Those are nice because it really does offer the spectrum of total independence up to and including a skilled nursing facility. One point that families have to be aware is that not all assisted living facilities can transition into a skilled nursing facility. So, in fact, their loved one may, in fact, have to move to a skilled nursing facility if their medical status requires that level of attention and care.
And that has to be somewhat devastating for a family and the aging loved one.
Absolutely.
That's where CCRC comes in.
It does, but frankly, you really want to start looking at moving into assisted living sooner rather than later, because in the event that if you're looking in an example would be if there's a couple and one of the couple has dementia issues, the sooner you move them into a facility, particularly if it's an early stage dementia, they get used to the environment and the transition is much more comfortable and smooth. And the partner who doesn't have dementia is able to make friends and literally get settled. Then as the individual with dementia's needs increase, the environment itself can then change and they can change into different levels of care where the individual without dementia still has the support of the people that they've made friends with and the services that they have, and the individual with dementia has a greater level of care and security as well as protection against wandering.
Now, do you continue working with families as these aging loved ones move into a community?
Oh, yes.
So you work with them the whole way?
That's the nice thing about them. You can start working with someone as an independent living in a home, in their own home. You can come in and work with them in a facility. There are times where I've been asked to do simple wellness checks even while an individual has been living in an assisted living community just because their family members live out of town and they want to be sure that mom or dad is still okay. My services also can be that of an advocate. There are times where when a loved one is in a facility, the family members don't feel that they're getting the kind of feedback that they'd like to hear about how their loved one is doing. My job is to go in and make sure that they're getting the information they need, whether it's even requesting a special care plan meeting so that everybody can sit down and find out how the loved one is doing.
You want to give our listeners an idea of what a family member should ask as far as questions at a facility that they're looking at?
Oh, yes. One of the first things that I recommend is take a tour. Come in at a time that is unannounced. Take a walking tour, see how it looks, see how it smells, is the staff friendly, ask about the turnover of the staff, find out if the individuals are receptive and responsive to the patient's needs or the resident's needs.
Well, Charlotte, you have been very informative today. I'm going to give you one last question, and then we're going to go to commercial break. And if you could leave us with one thought today about caring for older adults or someone with special needs, what would that be?
That there are a lot of resources out in the community that you can tap to support you. You're not alone, and that it's most important to look at services such as what I do and what my company does as a way to leverage your time as you're trying to manage your life, your family, your work, as well as caring in a nice, ethical, and responsible way for your loved one.
Great. Well, thank you so much, and this is Charlotte Bishop with Creative Case Management. Their website is creativecasemanagement.com, and we will be back on Aging Info Radio with my second expert guest today.
Built on a foundation of customer service, Total Parking Solutions, local company with over 35 years industry experience, highly trained and certified service staff. Total Parking Solutions, a proud provider of Calais multi-space parking technology to over 50 communities, transit authorities, and public institutions in the Chicagoland area. Visit us at www.totalparking.net. Proven parking technology to drive you into the future.
Me? I started smoking when I was 13. I always thought when the time came, I could quit. No problem. Then at 28, I tried to go cold turkey, and I found out how hard it really was. I made it all day without a smoke. Right until I met up with the guys. But I learned something that night. In fact, every time I tried to quit, there were more than a few. I learned a little more about what worked and what didn't work for me. And when I realized that I wasn't alone, that most people don't quit on their first or second attempt, I knew there was still hope. Today, I'm an ex-smoker. My only advice is to never, ever give up trying to quit.
If you're trying to quit smoking, the American Lung Association is here to help every step of the way. Visit quitterinyou.org for tools, tips, and stories from smokers we've helped to finally quit for good. The American Lung Association. We support the quitter in you at quitterinyou.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Welcome back to Aging Info Radio, and save the date on Saturday, November 13th from 9:30 a.m. until 3 p.m., Alternatives for Seniors is presenting the Senior Caregiver Expo for seniors, families, and healthcare professionals. The expo is being held at the Doubletree Hotel at 1909 Spring Road in Oak Brook. You can call 800-600-9516 for more information. Also, Alternatives for Seniors is a nationwide company with a guide that is in paperback or online. And it provides resources, housing options, home care, and more. And their website is alternativesforseniors.com. And once again, the number for the expo is 800-600-9516. My second expert guest today says that aging is a mystery for most of us. The over 85 years of age group is the fasting, growing group of people today. 80 million of us are reaching the age of 65 too quickly. 1,000 people an hour are turning 65, and someone turns 50 every 7 seconds. About aging, he is firmly convinced that keeping your inner child alive and nurtured is important. Staying social is another. Eating right and exercising is another. Stimulating the mind goes without saying, and being intimate is another important aspect on aging. I'd like to welcome Dr. Eric Shapira, a clinical gerontologist with a master's degree in clinical gerontology from Notre Dame. He is also the author of his new book called A New Wrinkle, What I Learned from Older People Who Never Acted Their Age. He is also an educator who has taught courses in healthy aging, successful aging, as well as courses in geriatric dentistry and special patient care. Welcome, Dr. Shapira, to Aging Info Radio.
Thank you, Sue. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you for being one of my expert guests today. And finding out a little bit about you, your background is very diverse. How did you go from being a dentist and a dentist to into gerontology?
Well, I was a dentist for over 35 years, and I was teaching for almost as long courses in geriatric dentistry, comprehensive patient care, dentistry courses for dentists to manage medically compromised individuals. And every time I started teaching a different course or two, I taught a communications course for health professionals for many, many, many years. People started bringing in other professionals with higher degrees, PhDs, what have you. So I decided to go back and get a master's degree in clinical gerontology, so I'd have some credibility, not that I didn't have one with a doctorate, but I was studying gerontology, and then one day, as I was operating in my dental office on someone, I reached for an instrument, and I couldn't pick it up, my hand wouldn't work, and I freaked out. And I'd been working in some discomfort for a long time, and finally something gave way, and I needed to have some neck surgery, which was very frightening for me. And as it turned out, I was not able to go back to practicing dentistry. And luckily, I had my master's in clinical gerontology to fall back on, but it was still not enough for me. I didn't feel I knew enough to help provide people the maximum amount of information that I felt they needed in light of our healthcare system. So I went back and got another master's in health administration. And that afforded me the ability to work with people and deal with them in crisis on a more of a business level, which was kind of interesting because I formulated some techniques based on business technology that have really helped me and other people cope with their problems.
Interesting.
That's how I got into gerontology.
Well, there you go. Well, the term geriatric doctor in Illinois seems to be disappearing. I don't know. I know you are from Half Moon Bay.
Yes.
Which is a beautiful part of California where they have the biggest pumpkin, as I heard on the news this week.
And that's aging as we speak.
And how big was that pumpkin, do you know?
Oh, it was close to 1,700 pounds, I believe.
That's a big pumpkin.
Yeah.
Well, do you feel that the term geriatric doctor is disappearing because of Medicare assignment, that doctors feel they don't want more patients, maybe due to the Medicare payment, or what do you see going on?
No, I don't see that. I see being a geriatrician, an MD who works with older people, is really a specialty of medicine, and I think it's a growing field, but there are not enough people, not enough internists going into that field. Many of the geriatricians that I work with do not take Medicare. They work on a cash basis only, and they're busier than a one-armed paper hanger. And who they're dealing with really are the baby boomers who are facing crises with their older parents. I just don't think there are enough programs in geriatric medicine around to educate as many people as we need. Our society is growing so fast now that we can't keep pace with what's happening. As you alluded to in the beginning of your show, the fastest growing cohort in our society is over 85, with many, many people living to far beyond 100 years and maintaining a fairly good state of health, although it's a misnomer because we know the older we get, the less resistance we have to disease, and our bodies become friable and break down on us. So there's always something to fix, and I'm looking at a bionic future world, I think, because of the new hips and knees and everything else that medicine is doing today. So it's affording us the ability to live longer and staying in relatively good shape. But I think that there are not enough gerontologists in our world to deal with the families of people who are facing these crises, and people who do counseling like myself or mentor people through the transitions of aging. I think that's really the problem. Medicare is Medicare, and the new health care bill hopefully will help afford people, the 47 million people that don't have insurance, will help them have care provided to them at a nominal or no-cost basis. As of 2014, the rules are going to change again. So those are things I need to study and other people need to study. But there are some really interesting things when it comes to dealing with protecting assets and what do we do with our personal property and how do we save what we have so that doesn't go to offset payment for a bed in a SNF unit or skilled nursing unit. These are things I look at on a daily basis. And yesterday, as a matter of fact, I had a young man call me. He's the sole caretaker caregiver for his parents. His father is bedridden. He's 84, and his mother is 84, and she's been depressed, clinically depressed, since 1969. And she came at him with a knife and said she was going to kill him and slice her wrists. So obviously there's a problem there. And he could not get a geriatrician to come to their home, and he could not get the mother to go out of the home to see a doctor. And that's really a common problem.
Wow. Well, let's talk about your specialty. Your specialty is aging, and what do you think it means to be old today in our culture?
Well, I have an 89-year young client, and she said, aging is not for sissies. Being old is not for sissies. And I tend to agree with her, but we're all aging. And when I tell somebody I'm a gerontologist, they say, what? And I had somebody interview me a couple of weeks ago, and she said, what's a gerontologist? I said, oh, it's a caveman who deals with dinosaurs. And I said, well, I'm an aging specialist. And my friends joke and tell everyone I'm a specialist who's aging, which I am. But I think being old in our society is a choice that we make. One chooses to be old. And doesn't necessarily mean you are old. My 94-year young mother-in-law has literally told me that she feels no more than 20 years young, if you will, in her mind. And she does things that we wouldn't perceive a 94-year young woman to be doing, such as still driving her car, still actively painting, still gardening. I tried to get her into a residential care facility, and she ended up buying a 10-acre ranch. So go figure. So some people are, you know, trudging through, pushing through. And I say, if you're going to choose to be old in our society, then put a B in front of it and be bold. You know, challenge yourself, challenge life, and make the most of your each day. And so I think that aging is relative. And if we start when we're young and we, at a younger age, let's put it that way, and we prepare ourselves through a good regimen, a good diet, a good exercise regimen, a good means of stimulating our minds, we keep stress at a minimum, learn how to cope with it, then I think that when we do age, we'll be better qualified to deal with the transitions that happen to all of us. We all experience things in different ways, obviously, because of the sum total of different experiences. But I think that if you start habitually when you're young, you'll be much better able to cope. But it's never too late to start.
So a lot of the boomers are not so much at peace with the aging process. In fact, I was in a meeting this week, and a business associate said, boomers hate the word seniors. Well, I've heard that there's other options out there. They're calling themselves J-Lo's for just a little older. And then I suggested to her, well, they could be sophomore citizens instead of senior. But why do you think that boomers are not making peace with the aging process?
Well, I think, you know, as a boomer myself, we live in a fast-paced, fast-food-oriented society. Boomers want instant gratification. They want it now, and they don't think about the future. And most boomers, I think, tend to be in denial about things like death and dying and chronic disease and dementia, you know, until it hits, until they have a crisis in their family. And as I wrote in my book, the Chinese word for crisis also means opportunity. So it's an opportunity for us to learn about ourselves in a different way and how we can cope with things or how we deal with things and how we can move through it in a positive manner without becoming too scathed by the experience. So I think as boomers we need to slow down a little bit. We need to plan for the future. One of the things I help people do is form a strategic elder plan, and I think that it's really important to be prepared. That's the Boy Scout motto. I liked it because it talks about being prepared for the future. And, you know, somebody chastised me by saying, well, you can have a plan, but inevitably it's going to change. Well, of course. Change is the only constant in life. And so the biggest thing I tell people is to learn to be flexible.
And stay flexible, right?
And stay flexible.
And we're going to be right back. We're going to take a commercial break. And I'm speaking to Dr. Eric Shapira. And his website is agingmentorservices.com. Don't go away.
I'm Seattle Sutton, founder of Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating. There's only one bottom line in weight loss, and that is you take in a certain number of calories, and when you wear off more calories than that, you lose weight. Fad diets just don't work. Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating works because we serve you what you should eat for the rest of your life. If anybody calls and asks, do you guarantee I will lose weight? You know what? We play no games. We tell them that if they order the 1,200-calorie plan and don't lose weight, they're either laying there in a coma, not wearing off calories, or they're cheating, because that's a fact. People appreciate that Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating tells it like it is. There are no gimmicks, no contracts to sign. Find us on the Internet at seattlesutton.com. For more information and your nearest location, call Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating day or night. Call toll-free 800-442-DIET. That number again is 800-442-DIET. Call now. You'll be glad you did.
In hearing this message, you may be tempted to change the channel, so allow me. Still hearing me? Try again. If you have ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, this is kind of what it's like, since it takes control of your body, making you unable to move. You can't affect your surroundings. You see, hear, feel everything. But if you try to change the channel, nothing happens. You are forced to endure what is in front of you. But by supporting the ALS Association, you can further global research to find a cure and give people the ability to see, feel, and hear the way they were meant to, and to live full lives free of ALS. So even though you have the ability to change the channel and ignore this message, could you go to ALSA.org and join the fight?
Hi, I'm George Bliss with a message for Autism Awareness Month. Nearly 1 in 110 children are diagnosed with autism. Some are able to live lives of independence while others simply cannot. How can you help if you know a family affected by autism? Next time you're running errands, offer to do theirs as well. Give the caregivers a break by offering to stay with their loved one. And finally, if you see a child with autism having a difficult time, offer the parent an encouraging word. For more information, visit autismspeaks.org.
Welcome back to Aging Info Radio, and the caregiving crisis at work is here now. If you are an HR director or you know an HR director, tell them to be proactive or be proactive and contact Aging Info USA. You can empower your caregiving employees with the aging and elder care education and resources that they need. Aging Info USA provides aging and elder care educational seminars, lunch and learns, health fairs, and more. Contact Aging Info USA at 847-630-0381 or go to their website at aginginfousa.com. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Eric Shapira, and as I said right before the break, his website is agingmentorservices.com. And I have a couple questions, Dr. Shapira, before we get into your book. I do want to talk about your book, A New Wrinkle, mm-hmm. What I Learned from Older People Who Never Acted Their Age. Got to love that. My question is, how do families deal with the ends of the spectrum, such as sandwich generation, still caring for their children, and also their aging parents? What is your advice on this?
Well, good question. As I said, one is to be prepared, so that when you do have an unmet need or a challenge with a parent, it'll be rote. You know, practice makes permanence. I used to practice emergency drills in my office, not because practice makes perfect, but because it makes permanence, where we don't have to stop and think about what to do. So we need to have all of our ducks in order. We need to make sure that our documents are on file, our parents have a durable power of health care, that there is an attorney in kind or someone who has power of attorney. We need to make sure that there's a trust and that things are taken care of financially, that maybe they have long-term care insurance to help offset the high cost of care at a later age. All these things should be looked at a fairly young age, and the baby boomer should be brought into the decision-making process unless the parent is not cognitive at all, then it's going to be totally on their shoulders. But those things all need to be set in a row and should be filed in a file somewhere where the baby boomer, the child can get, or the children can get to it as soon as possible in order to handle a crisis. I think it's really, really important to do this ahead of time.
Now, what do you say to a family, or say somebody in a family comes to you and says, I have no idea. My parents have never told me, they're not willing to have that conversation, or I've never opened that conversation with them
right.
to find out, you know, about their power of attorney health care or, you know, what they want. What do you say to a family someone that's taking care of an aging loved one?
Well, I first of all, it's kind of a difficult thing to broach a family where they don't want any outside help, or they don't want to deal with some of these things. Even older people are in denial to some of these things. You know, nothing's happened to me so far, so nothing's going to happen to me. So what I tell boomers is to bring somebody like myself in, or a clinical psychologist, or a social worker who can educate the parents about what to expect in the future and what to look at and how to be prepared. So that's how I broach it. You know, I'm an educator. I try to help people stay healthy and live longer, and that's how I like to be introduced to the parents. And when they hear that, usually their ears perk up and they allow me to come in. And the first thing I do is assess their feelings about where they're at in time and space, and then I ask them what they would like to know about. I want to know what they want to know first before I sit there and throw all this stuff at them that they're not going to listen to. I want to know what they're concerned about and where they want to go. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So it's important for me to know which road to take when I talk with people.
Well, you have a lot of great sayings. I like that. What is the best advice you could give anyone in staying young and healthy?
Well, as I alluded to, be prepared, stay flexible with change, and learn to accept things. You know, things aren't going to always go your way, so we have to be able to compromise. If you're going to continue to work, you need to plan to work and work to plan, and you need a set of core values in your life so that you know where you're going and you have some benchmarks to follow. If you're going to retire, it's really important to still have a plan, because we all need to have a sense of self-worth and self-esteem. And a lot of people who are retired, not from choice, but because they've gotten laid off. 30% of our workforce over 65 is not working, and not by choice. They've gotten laid off. About 20% of those people are trying to reinvent themselves. And so we still need a plan. We still need to do something, such as volunteer. And I tell people it's important to give your gifts away, and that way you get something back, and maybe not expect it, but you do in the long run. So you know yourself a little better. Know thyself with respect to change. I think it's important to challenge yourself. As you alluded to, you have to nurture your inner child. It really keeps you young and playful, and it returns the fun aspect to your life. I think that's really important. I think intimacy is extremely important, and I'm not just talking about sexual intercourse. I'm talking about, in the book I wrote, the definition of intimacy as into me see. Being with people or being with someone you care about and trust and telling them your real feelings and thoughts. I think that's a good form of intimacy, but sex is always welcomed. There are people, my mother-in-law especially, is still having sex at 94.
And she told you that?
Yeah, actually, it was really a funny story. She was having sex with a 101-year-old, phone sex with a 101-year-old man, and she killed him. Not on purpose, but it was too much for him. So now she's looking for a younger man who has more sustainable power, which is quite humorous if you look at it.
That is very humorous.
And the last thing I would say is to learn to forgive yourself for expectations you put on yourself and the expectations others may have put on you, and to forgive others. And to do that is very freeing for your mind, freeing for your soul. And it allows you the freedom to move forward without any encumbrances. So those are the things I think that help us stay youthful as we age.
Words of wisdom. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's talk. It took you 2 years to write your book. Let's talk about your book, A New Wrinkle.
Mm-hmm.
And what prompted you to write it?
Well, every time I gave a lecture at San Francisco State on death and dying, or writing a legacy, or healthy aging, or I gave a dental lecture, people would ask me if I had a book and on aging, healthy aging. And I finally, after two neck surgeries to correct some of the problems I had in my neck, I was wearing a Philadelphia collar, which is very rigid, and I couldn't sleep. I had to wear it 24/7 for almost a year, and I was up every night, and I sat at the computer, and actually, Sue, this book just flowed out of me. It just came out. It was ready to happen. Got 13 chapters on everything from identity and reinventing yourself to death and dying, or living with dignity and being self-sustaining and independent. So I've got alternative health care, families in crisis, sex and intimacy, new material on sex and intimacy, and new material on families in crisis and how to deal with issues that happen to all of us at one time or another, including how to find a caregiver and the need for a caregiver and what to look for and that type of thing. So I sat down and wrote this book, and the third year was proofing, editing, and updating the book. So that was a lot of work, and I think it's a great primer on aging, and it's educational. I'm a teacher, so there's a full index in the back. There's a glossary of terms if you don't understand a word, and there's a resource list that's worth its weight in gold. It took me a year to put together, and I have... For example, I had a friend call me. My aunt's 94, and we've been paying $7,000 a month to keep her in assisted living, and they just called hospice on her. But what do we do? So I went to the back of the book, looked up the National Hospice and Palliative Care Association, gave them the numbers, said, get her in a hospice where she's at, and Medicare will kick in, and it'll help. And it did. And she lived another 7 or 8 months. They saved about $60,000 on that phone call, and luckily I had the number at my fingertips. So it's a good resource guide.
Well, I will say this. I was researching your book. I have not gotten it or had a chance to, of course, not read it. But it says, I love this book. It tells so much about aging, growing wise, and having a sense of humor in the process. There is no need to be glum about growing old. Dr. Shapiro shows us through his vast experience with older people that getting older can mean getting better. I look forward to wrinkles now. And that was written by a man by the name of Jack McKinnon.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, where can you get your book?
You can get the book on my website, newwrinklebook.com. You can get it through amazon.com or get it on your Kindle. You can get it at barnesandnoble.com or request it at any bookstore. And I was very fortunate, Sue, this year to win a Pinnacle Book Achievement Award for a self-help book. And I'm very proud of that. So it's a great book. People will enjoy it. It's got a little larger print. It's got some nice spacing. It's got poetry in it. It's got philosophy in it. It's got new information. It's easy to read, and I think people will really enjoy it.
Well, interesting. I want to touch on we've got a few more minutes, and I just know with you being in dentistry,
yes,
that there is an important aspect to aging and keeping your teeth and gums healthy. Can
Absolutely.
You elaborate a little bit on that for our listeners?
Amazingly enough, I did my master's thesis on self-efficacy and keeping your teeth in relation to living longer. And I found that those people that kept their teeth, their natural teeth, and provided themselves with regular ongoing care, both medicine-wise and dental-wise, live longer. There's a lot of bacteria in the mouth. As you know, we become resistant to bacteria at some point in our lives if our resistance is lowered by disease or any kind of chronic malady such as diabetes. Our resistance to fight infection is lessened. And recently there was an article in the Journal of the American Dental Association by a guy named Glass that actually took 51 pieces of dentures that people actually wore from the East Coast and the West Coast. They took pieces of those dentures, cultured them, and found way over 300 to 600 types of bacteria that were actually living in the body of the denture. The denture is solid, but however, it's porous. And if people use a hard brush or toothpaste on a denture, it promotes they're abrasive, and they put micro scratches in the denture, which make a larger surface area for bacteria to live in. And normal brushing doesn't get them out, so you have to soak your dentures in specific denture cleansers to help eliminate the disease. And one of the bacteria they found was a Streptococcus pneumonia, which can be aspirated into the lungs and cause people to have pneumonia. They found that the inflammatory response to these bacteria and denture stomatitis and irritations in the mouth can affect your coronary arteries and inflame your heart, and also cause increased insulin resistance in people. So there is some correlation between oral disease and systemic disease, and it's eye-opening, and it's shocking because people don't understand that process. So it's important to keep your mouth clean, floss the teeth you want to keep, if you have teeth, hopefully, and remember that attached to every tooth is a person, and we want to keep those teeth because they function for more than just chewing and eating. They hold up your facial structure. They give you a smile for sociability. They allow you the ability to actually eat foods that...
Hold that thought.
Yes?
I'm so sorry, Dr. Eric Shapiro, but we have run out of time today. You
okay.
are a world of information, and when I have a dental implant person on, I will be contacting you so we can go on about this. But I thank you for being my expert guest on Aging Info Radio today. I must have lost him.
I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Okay. Well, we'll be in touch, Dr. Eric Shapiro, and thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
All right. And I'd like to thank my expert guest today, Charlotte Bishop with Creative Case Management. Charlotte's direct line is 847-869-5118, and their website is creativecasemanagement.com. And Dr. Eric Shapiro, clinical gerontologist and author of A New Wrinkle. And his website is agingmentorservices.com. Thank you to my listeners, WJJG AM 1530, and Jim, my most awesome programmer. You can join Aging Info Radio on Facebook for weekly updates and information, and on our website at aginginforadio.com, where we list our future guests and archive our audio shows. So if you've missed a show, you can always go back and listen to it. And once again, that's aginginforadio.com. Join us next Thursday. We'll be back at 1 p.m. And you make it a great day. On an American goodbye note, I believe it is all of our responsibility to take care of our seniors, many of whom are the foundation of our country, and may their strength and dedication be passed on for generations to come.
See the moon roll across the stars. See the seasons turn like a heart. Your father's days are lost to you. This is your time.